All right, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course you lurking conservatives. Also, all you liberals rejoicing that Randy Rhodes now has a new home in Nova M. Congratulations, Randy. I swear to God, the infighting that we are capable of as a movement, as a group of people, as a big tent is profound. It's Marin in for Malloy. 800-989-1480 is the number. I know everyone's been abuzz. Randy quit. Quit Air America. Well, good for her. If that's what she wanted to do, it was the right thing to do. And I guess I would have quit hadn't I been fired. Hadn't I been fired twice. I don't know what it is about some of us who will take that amount of crap from an employer. But I guess sometimes you just want to be part of something, don't you? Well, look, if you want to talk to me about that, I'll talk to you about it. 800-989-1480. I don't know if this is my last radio show or not. It is my last fill-in for Mike. I've had a great time. I'm going to Sydney, Australia on Saturday. I have no idea what to expect. I know that I lose a day or a day and a half. It's been a big day in the news. There's a lot of things going on. I'm sure you've heard that all day. That on this network, everything that's gone on in the news. So I'm going to ease into it. I want to thank all the people yesterday who gave me advice on aphids, from spraying them with soap, from putting Coca-Cola on the plant so ants come and eat the aphids, from buying ladybugs by the thousands. I was told I could get a deal on about 1,000 ladybugs. And then I was told by somebody else that you shouldn't, because most of the ladybugs that you can buy in America are Asian. And hence don't really aggregate, is that the right word, or assimilate into the American ecosystem with any sort of grace. They throw things off. Not unlike the Chinese throwing our economy off, but that's the least of the problems. I also got advice to just talk to the aphids. Use your Buddha nature, reach out to them, say hello, aphid. I respect your Buddha nature, you respect mine. Now get off of my rose bush. I got one rose bush. And I got a little tweaked out about the aphids. I chose to spray them down with Dr. Bronner's peppermint soap mixed in a little water. And it looks like it might have worked. It was either that or the banana peels that I read about yesterday. It's interesting just how compelling a little bit of pest control can be. I'm all jacked up on Diet Dr. Pepper. I've had some coffee. I'm a little without my nicotine gum. I'm here at the Great Id Mill. One of the great Clear Channel outlets, the Los Angeles Clear Channel outlet, delicately weaving sounds and rap and talk into the heads of everybody in the Southern California area. I've spent the day trying to figure out what the hell to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. I also worked out with a trainer. How's that grab you? I'm that kind of guy, I guess, when I choose to do it. My trainer's a genius. She's just emasculating enough. I don't pay a lot of money. I pay a reasonable amount for the body that will make me feel that I am still in the game, folks. Is that vain to feel like a... Look, I've given up on the idea that I'll have a washboard stomach. Many days I just spend almost going to the gym. But I think I burned some calories there because it's a very active almost. I wake up with every intention of going because it's healthy, it's good. I don't think I just do it for that. I think there's some part of me that thinks that I am going to be an Olympic athlete. Not this time around. Though they asked me, I'm not going to China. For a couple of reasons. I'm protesting the Tibet issue. Enough of that. And I'm also I'm a little concerned about the air quality out there, so I had to turn down the Olympics. I was approached at a small gym here in Los Angeles by someone who said he was a recruiter for the Olympics. I don't know if it was for real or not. It made me a little uncomfortable. But, yeah, I don't know. But I might as well believe the guy. I didn't go home with him. He said I had to audition at his house. So that was awkward, but I just felt it was inappropriate. I told him to email me. I never heard from him. But I was flattered nonetheless. But I spent a lot of days almost going. You know when you wake up and you're like, I'm going to go. This is it. Today's the day I go. Today's the day I start to fight death. This is it. I got to go. Why'd I join if I'm not going to go? And then you get into that weird zone where you're saying things like, well, I've only got 4 hours. You know, it's going to take me 10 minutes to get there on the highway, probably 13 minutes. I'm going to be on the thing for 20, and then I'm going to be on the... Yeah, I don't think I'm going to make it. Not with 4 hours. I ain't going to make it today. I don't understand something. There's a part of the vanity that comes with this, this self-centeredness, this consumer culture that I was talking about yesterday, this idea that we have to be constantly exercising, constantly fighting to be better, or that we're not good enough. I don't know what it is. But I remember when gyms started popping up everywhere, and when it became the trend, I think I was like in my 20s. I remember Janine Garofalo used to work at the Joy of Movement Fitness Center in Kenmore Square in Boston, Massachusetts. When I went back there in 1987, after doing some graduate work in drug use in Hollywood with the late, great Sam Kennison, I went back, and there she was, the little smoking Janine Garofalo, who'd just taken up smoking, I think, at 26, working as a receptionist at a fitness center. Could you imagine? Can you imagine that? But I thought that when all those gyms started showing up in America and everybody started to go to the gym, like it was became something you had to do, that I just kept thinking about fascism. I kept thinking about Hitler. I kept thinking about Nazi Germany. That the first things they started to do, they started to have youth fitness clubs. Everybody has to get in shape. Get in shape. For the fatherland. But that's not what we do here. We get in shape so we can keep eating. We get in shape so we can keep working. We get in shape so we can keep drinking more coffee. Be more efficient. Be more machine-like. Be prepared. We get in shape to just stay on top of the situation. I see bodybuilders at the gym, and I don't understand it. I don't understand those guys at all. I understand maybe just staying in shape so you don't drop dead at too young an age, just to keep the plaque out of your arteries and your heart. But you see these guys that are the size of trucks? I mean, what is that? I mean, what are you saying to the world? Look at it. I'm unemployed. I never leave the gym. I'm here all day. That's all I do. You see me here yesterday, I'll be here tomorrow. I'm going to sleep here. I don't know what drives that. What employment opportunities are those guys up for? Seriously. What do those guys do? Their heads don't even fit their bodies properly. What can they do? It's so funny that this is who I'm picking on to open the show, a political show. I'm going to pick on monsters, self-created mutants, giants. How's that job interview look? All right, buddy. Yeah, you got the job, man. There's the door. There's the rope. Here's the list of people that are going to be allowed in. You got it? What was the first thing again? What was it? The rope? But then I figured it out. You know what it is, and this is what it all is. This is what it all comes down to, our reactions. So much of consumerism is based on a feeling of insecurity, a feeling of not being enough. It's imposed on us. We're made to feel that way. And this has a profound... I can actually chase this down to misogyny, exploitation of people, exploitation of children. Maybe we'll continue that conversation. I haven't decided yet. I have no producer but the one that's in my head. But what's inside a bodybuilder? I saw a guy lifting about 900 pounds, and I looked right into his soul because I couldn't help but stare at him. I was astounded. He looked like he was about to poop. And I saw into his soul. I looked right into his eyes, and he didn't see me doing it, but I can do that on a good day. And you know what's in there? Just a sad little boy. Yeah, just a sad little boy who didn't get enough hugs when he was a kid. Maybe his dad hit him a couple of times. Maybe he never felt good enough. Yeah, just didn't get enough hugs. So in essence, what he's done is he's created this cocoon of human flesh and muscle to hug him all the time, as long as he feeds it. Little broken babies in there. I have a similar analogy to strippers and people in the sex industry. It's an ironic thing. You know, you see women who get fake breasts and augment everything and do striptease acts or do pornography. That's their fortress. What's in there? It's a crying little girl on a strip stage, and out in front's a crying little boy the size of a truck. Just crying children, working monsters from the inside. It's Mark Maron. It's been interesting already. 800-989-1480. The conversation continues about what I don't know.
Out on the briny, where the moon's big and shiny, melting your heart of stone. I'm gonna get you on a slow boat to China, all to myself. You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'.
All right, Maron, in for Malloy. Good evening, good afternoon. I don't know what time it is for you. It's 6 o'clock for me. 6:20, something like that. I'm on Pacific time. 800-989-1480 is the number. I seem to have gone off on some tangent about bodybuilding because I am just shredding. I'm ripping out of my shirt right now. That's how huge I am. Because Sydney Sloan, the tattooed goddess of the gym, took me through a workout today. Not that it matters to anybody. Just want to say I'm healthy. And if you want her to help you, Sydney Sloan at sbcglobal.net. How do you like that? A little plug for my trainer. Look, folks. All right. Calls already. I want to talk about this cult. Is that okay? Can I distract? Can I get away from politics for a minute? And not that I've even started to talk about it, but I will. There are big problems. McCain is closing the gap. Obama and Clinton are closing a gap. Everything is fragmented. If we get this thing to a 50-50 place again, we're in trouble because you know these bastards will steal it. I don't know what has to be done, but something has to be done. But this cult thing, I am fascinated with religious cults, with sex. And this thing in El Dorado, Texas becomes more and more disturbing. Because, you know, we were talking about misogyny yesterday. We were talking a little bit about God, about belief, about freedom of belief, about theocracy. And as I said yesterday, that this is what a theocracy looks like, is that sect that they've decided is a sect in El Dorado, Texas, where they brought in about 400 kids, a bunch of teenagers, a bunch of women left on their own. It's an offshoot of the Latter-day Saints. It's a Mormon cult started by that guy Jeffs, who's in jail. It's a polygamy cult. But let's be honest. I mean, in terms of misogyny or sexism and institutionalized misogyny or sexism, the sheriff of El Dorado did a press conference today and said, you know, we knew this was going on. We knew this was happening. We knew there was polygamy out there. We knew there was a possibility that old men were marrying underage girls, but we couldn't do anything about it. Really? You couldn't do anything about it? You couldn't do anything about it. There was nothing to be done. It just seems to me that the institutions are put in place to enable a type of misogyny, and this is institutionalized child abuse. This was not a Mormon sect. These guys went down there today and they found a bed or two in the temple, a ceremonial bed in the temple. This was a sect that worshipped teenage vagina. That's what this was. There's no way around it. This stuff was too powerful for these freaks. I have no tolerance for this kind of thing, but this is ritualized sex abuse. There's no other way around it. I don't care if they were wearing prairie outfits or little hats or Michael Landon was there. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, let's talk about what's going on there. This isn't Mormon. This isn't Jesus. This is ritualized sex abuse in a public forum that everybody let happen. And it's been going on for years with these freaks. Now, maybe I'm being intolerant, but come on. Come on. And there's no argument about this stuff. This is not, as it's said in the Book of Mormon, because, you know, Joe Smith saw some spinning plates and whatever the hell it was. I mean, religion enables people to do whatever the hell they want if they can surround themselves with enough fanatics, enough freak show people, enough whack jobs. And yesterday I was talking about atheism and like Scientology. This, like, out here we have Scientology. And I got to be honest with you folks, it gives me the creeps a little bit. It just gives me the creeps. Is it a cult? Is it a religion? You know, how should it be determined? You know, because they believe in flying saucers and L. Ron Hubbard, and you know, he used to be part of he was a science fiction writer. He was also, you know, involved with the early rocket program at USC because he had a relationship with one of the rocket engineers there, and they used to have ritualized sex stuff with his wife, and it always gets weird. And they believe in Thetans and the mothership coming. Is that a cult? Is that a sect? Aren't they all cults? I mean, you know, he believes in spaceships coming. Plenty of people believe in spaceships coming. How is that any different than Jesus coming back? Except the fact is that Scientology has no philanthropic enterprise, does not care about other people, is completely based on self. At least with the Christian idea, you do have some caring involved. But I'm afraid of it. I'm afraid of you know, look, I don't know how grounded I am. I mean, I'll read just about anything. I got a lot of books with bookmarks 15 pages in on my bookshelf, maybe 22 pages. A lot of big books, complicated books. I'll read the big ones. I'll take it in for 15 or 20 pages. And that's where the arrogant moment happens where I say, I get it right here. This is where I got it. But I've read a lot of weird books, but I will not read Dianetics, my friends. Won't go near it, not even out of curiosity. I don't know how grounded I am. I don't know what page it happens on. If you're just saying, like, I'm just curious to see what these cats are up to. Page 7, you just snap and like, oh, I don't need my parents anymore. They're the ones that broke me. When's the mothership coming? I don't know. Maybe end up in a blackout, and 3 weeks later you're driving a limo with a limo driver's outfit on. You're saying, where to now, Mr. Cruz? Mr. Travolta's house again. I won't tell anybody. I'm sworn to the L. Ron Hubbard code of secrecy. I won't tell your secrets. Okay with me, Top Gun. Marin in for Malloy. 800-989-1480. Don't know where I'm going, but stay here and go with me.
Says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Now, I want to ask you a question. Do you believe in God? Do you believe in God? Do you believe?
All right, Marin in for Malloy. I don't know how we got to where we are, man. 800-989-1480. I've been praying. Because sometimes it just gets so ugly and so weird and so difficult in my head that I will drop to my knees and say a prayer to the air. There's something humbling about it. There's no doubt about that. I have no steady belief in anything specific, and I sort of operate against it. I don't call myself an atheist nor an agnostic, just a guy who's a guy and occasionally has fits of fear and panic that require me getting on my knees and humbling myself and just reminding myself that I have almost no control over anything outside of my pants. I seem to have offended an atheist a little bit, not much yesterday. It's weird when you offend atheists. Usually I offend Christians and people of all different types of religions. I don't begrudge anybody their belief, and I don't want to be too provocative here because I'm with you. Do what you got to do to get through. Just don't try to impose it on me. But I did get some flack, not flack, but I got a response from an atheist who is not mad at me. I got some a response from a person who says I have misunderstood the book, The Secret. Dear Mark, I think your comments about atheists last night were not correct. I am an atheist, but I don't get to be one by cold scientific reasoning. I was brought up to be an atheist. My folks were atheists, as were my grandparents. Atheism is not meant that I am dispassionate and reasonable as I contemplate the world, but it does mean that I contemplate other reasons that things are the way they are. I have no problem with theists, but I cannot see any evidence that their constructs are real, helpful, or perhaps most especially moral. I think the world is a wondrous place, but I can't see any reality to the idea that a superior being, or two or three, rule this world with any consistent principles. There's too much cruelty and despair without rhyme or reason. Of course, it's possible that the Job story really was a thrill to this being, and thus it must be repeated over and over, but I think not. You think not? You don't think that we are God's toys? And he just tinkers, smiling evilly in the air. Look at them toil. Look at them try. There is no end, and there is no payoff. I mean, eternity? Eternity? Oh, my God. Anything for eternity is going to get tiring. More important is the way atheists are treated. Having grown up as one, I can tell you it is not something I talk about often. As a kid, it was downright scary. I went to school in New York City, and on Wednesday at 2 p.m., all the kids left for release time, which means they went to their respective religious institutes for instruction. I was the only kid left in school. I can't imagine my teachers were thrilled, but I was a quiet, self-contained child who could be ignored for hours as I entertained myself, so they ignored me. As an adult, my atheism is often considered a no-preference vote, and many people think that I can be asked to participate in their religious activities because it makes no difference to me. Hey, you, non-believer, come on, wear the hat. Come on, put the hat on. What do you care? It doesn't mean anything to you. Put the hat on. The media talks about freedom of religion, but seldom adds freedom from religion. That's right. They're all over the place. I got somebody calling about L. Ron Hubbard. Charles, listening on the internet in San Francisco. What's up, buddy? Turn it down a little bit.
You can talk about any of the above. A dozen things. First of all, the Nova program, Secrets of the Mind,
yeah,
with Ramachandran. You know, mm-hmm. Some people have the God Center and some people don't. So I think being an atheist is as natural as being religious is. A whole bunch of research is going on with neuropsychology. And then about our dear, dear friend, L. Ron Hubbard, I would recommend the book Sex and Rockets,
yeah,
The Occult World of Jack Parsons.
That's right.
By John Carter.
It's a great book, and I read a chapter on that Davis.
Having a senior moment.
Yeah, City of Courts. There was a whole chapter on L.A. I think his name is Mike Davis. I find his books very difficult, but there was a chapter on Jack Parsons, the rocket scientist who was involved with L. Ron Hubbard, and they did sex rituals with Jack Parsons' wife, and later Parsons, I believe, I don't think his wife as well, was killed in some sort of explosion, some sort of blast.
Actually, it was Jack Parsons' wife's younger sister. But you really need to buy the book and read it, Sex and Rockets. It's pretty wild.
Thank you for your call, man. You got anything else?
They were trying to do Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, bring it to summon the beast.
Yeah, bring the beast into the world.
Thanks, man. Yeah, there were some weird cats, and I don't want to get hung up on this, but I seem to be hung up on it. I do want to talk about real things, but there was just something about, I guess this is real. It's my last night here. What difference does it make? Right? I'm going to Australia. Perhaps I may never come back. Here's a guy that says I misunderstood The Secret. There's nothing new in The Secret. The practice of visualization that they somewhat poorly represented and that is always mischaracterized as positive thinking, as you did, is an old spiritual principle. The problem is that our culture has an inappropriate focus on material things, and therefore all measures of success is seen through this prism. This obsession is also rejected in these popular movements, and the idea that one can just think about things and things will come is the logical extraction. The problem is magnified by people who profit from pushing the idea of something for nothing. What is better said is that what picture or model of the world one holds in their head will eventually be realized, or if one visualizes themselves in a situation they desire, or acts as if the situation or thing one desires is existent or inevitable, the conditions for the realization for that situation will present themselves. Where The Secret is flawed is by its focus on material gain and by giving people the idea that changing your worldview is easier can happen overnight. This leads people to getting all hyped up and then let down when their millions don't fall from the sky on schedule. Okay, so that means that The Secret is bunk and that it misleads people and it gives them a false sense of hope. So I was right about that. But, yeah, the idea of visualization, everything's your own perception. I can choose to be happy right now in this moment and think that everything's fine and I feel great. Or I can surrender to the idea that I'm sitting here in a cockpit surrounded by blinking lights that I don't understand, a panel of buttons and knobs that I don't get. I'm completely intimidated by the technology around me. I got 9 people IMing me, and I'm a little overwhelmed. That's the reality, but I am happy and I am talking, and I seem to be rambling. Now, I got some other email that I think, hold on, let me make sure I've got, let me just take a couple more of these before I go on to the next thing. Edie, listening in Dogpatch, Alabama, how are you?
Hi, haven't spoken to you in, well, since the Morning's Edition days.
It's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
How are you doing down there? How's everything in Dogpatch, Alabama? Where is that exactly?
Montgomery.
Oh,
yeah.
I've been to Montgomery.
You have?
Sure.
It's
sure,
like Scrum, huh?
No, I got a buddy whose granddad lives down there. His granddad's a big doctor out there in Montgomery. You know the Jackson Hospital in Montgomery?
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, my buddy from high school, Devin Jackson, his grandfather's the namesake of that place.
Oh, really? I thought it was Andrew Jackson.
Nope.
No? Well, that's good to know. I don't like Andrew Jackson.
So what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say hi, basically. And you were talking about books.
Yeah.
And may I tell you what I'm reading now?
I'd love to hear it.
The Political Brain by Drew Weston.
Yeah.
And he was interviewed by Daryl Daniels, founder of democracyinteractive.com.
Okay.
This chat room where we are right now talking about you and stuff as we listen.
What are you learning? Can you enlighten me with some nuggets?
Oh, yeah. Well, he just lays it out. It's difficult for me to explain it to you, but as I read it, you know, and I'm going, well, I thought, what's he going to tell me?
That's right.
And he lays it about these crumbs and all, but he just lays it out in such an easy way to just follow it.
All right, well, I will look for it, Edie, and I appreciate your call. Thanks for calling me. I what's amazing about reading is that when you're reading it, it feels like you're thinking it. That's the addictive nature of reading. Nathan, KTLK, Long Beach. What's up, man? You're on with Mark Maron.
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing, man. What's on your mind?
I'd like to open up the conversation about Christian worldview.
Okay.
I feel like whenever there's a mention of Christianity, especially in pop culture and even in the world of politics, it's grossly misunderstood.
Uh-huh.
And it's fueled by a lot of pagan imagery and a lot of things that really are not even emphasized, like, in the Christian scriptures.
Hold on a minute. Hold on. Did you just use pagan imagery as an example of how it's being, you know, misunderstood publicly?
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, wait. So, you believe in pagan imagery?
Do I believe in pagan imagery?
I mean, do you use that as a way to describe things?
No. I feel like we have used pagan imagery for so long within pop culture and whatnot to describe the message of Christianity.
But you're saying I guess what I'm asking you is that if somebody said, "Hey, man, let's go to McDonald's and get some hamburgers," would you? Because I love McDonald's, man. McDonald's is the best. I almost worship McDonald's. Would you be a kind of guy who would say, "Well, clearly, McDonald's is pagan imagery to you"? You would,
no,
right?
No, I'm not getting the question.
I'm just saying that, you know, where are you coming from in this argument about Christianity in defending?
Where I'm coming from is, well, I'll just throw it out here, is that even like your mention of Christianity often conjures up images of, yeah, like we believe that there's this man God that came and he died and he made an atonement or has paid for sin so that people can get snatched up out of this world and go to some other place someday.
Yeah.
Or if people don't ascribe to that belief, that they're going to be burning in fire and a lake
ouchie
of torment.
Ouchie!
And,
ouchie! For eternity, just a lot of ouch.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I'm saying. Now, I'm arguing is that that's a completely misrepresented worldview of of Christianity.
Not of Catholicism, not of a branch of Christianity. Perhaps the Christianity that you're talking about is the new Christ-free Christianity, where everybody just feels good and it's okay, just treat your neighbor cool and buy the book.
No, that's not what I'm arguing for.
Okay.
I'm arguing for a better understanding, not necessarily saying like, oh, this is the way, this is right, and you should believe this. I'm arguing for a reconstruction of our understanding of Christianity within politics, within pop culture, within whatever culture in general.
Right, and I think we're
understanding
where that has to start is stop letting whack jobs talk publicly too often. Thanks for your call, man. All right, well, let's change subjects to John McCain and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the war and the oncoming apocalypse. Man, if there's a God, he's running late. 46 past. It's Marin. Stay with it. Okay, it's Marin in for Malloy. 800-989-1480. It's, I believe, Thursday, one day closer to the day we all can't breathe at the same time for reasons that we could have controlled. One day closer to that. What if that's the way the world ends? Everybody just walks outside gasping and baffled. What happened? I don't know. We could have stopped it. I know that. We could have stopped it. Somebody should have stopped it. These morons. But look, I want you to understand, folks, that I don't begrudge anybody their religious beliefs, and I wish I was a little more disciplined in some ways myself. I've just never been a searcher in that way. I've never felt that was what was missing in my life was God. And I talk about this on stage, and I'll be honest with you, I've made fun of all the religions a bit. I'm a little easier on the Muslim religion because I'm not stupid, but I've tackled some of it and I've been judged for it, and people have gotten angry at me for talking about it. But never, ever has a Christian come up and tried to save me, and I think I'd be a challenge. I think that's the way to go. I don't know why they get mad. They should be praying for me and stepping up after the show. One guy did. One guy came up to me and said, I know you got God in there. I know you got God in you. A buddy of mine, Tom Rhodes, years ago said, I mocked him because he was pretty Christian at the time. He was brought up with it. And he always had a pretty good disposition. And he had just gone on and performed and gotten done well and then gotten off. And I was about to go on, and I was younger and a little more angry, a little more frightened. And I was like, oh, God, this is going to stink. And I said to him, I guess I'd be all right if I had Jesus on my side. And he just looked at me and smiled and said, you do, man. You do. I don't even know why I'm talking about this. My brother's like half an Orthodox Jew. He's sort of like a Jew Buddhist guy. He's always had that search in him. He's always had that yearning, that craving, that spiritual need for connection. I mean, this guy would, he observes the Sabbath. He keeps kosher. And at that point, he wasn't going to temple. And I was thinking to myself, don't you have to put it all together? Don't you have to, it should all be one, oh, someone just IM'd. You haven't lived until a Mormon tries to convert you. They have. They've tried to convert me. They come right up to your door dressed as the Blues Brothers, and they'll lay it on you. Jehovah's Witnesses, too. Jehovah's Witnesses came up to my door once when I was on break from, and again, I don't mean to mock the myths that define anyone. Thank you, Zoe. But I remember one time I'd just gotten off a particularly bad bender, and I was at home, and I was wearing a red robe and sitting around like Satan might have had he been poor and a comedian living in Los Angeles. And some Jehovah's Witnesses came by, a woman, an older woman and a younger woman, and I was fairly lascivious and probably smelling of vodka. And I invited them in, and they were laying their wrap down on me, and the younger girl was getting a little squirrely, and the older girl was getting a little protective. It was getting a little ugly in there because, you know, the beast was all sort of, you know, being awakened. And they literally said, we're going to go and perhaps come back with another member. So the beast in me had scared them away, had pushed the women away. And sure enough, they came back the next day with the younger woman's husband to kind of slap me around a little with the Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, with the, you know, no dancing, no doing whatever you did to my wife the other day with your head, none of that. And he left frightened too, but so that didn't work. But look, I just found that it's very disconcerting to me that these type of religions that that happened in El Dorado, Texas, that this, as fascinating as it is in an evil way and as perverse as it all is, the fact that the authorities knew about it, to me, I find disturbing and enabling, enabling a sect that worships teenage vagina and allows, you know, ritual sex to go on just because they're afraid to step in is a little disconcerting, though fascinating in a perverse way. Okay, let's try to shift gears here. Teresa, listening in Golden Bridge, New York. How are you? You're with Mark Maron. Are you there?
It's Teresa.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Well, I have a lot of things to say to you because, God, I didn't think I'd ever get on. You were talking about Dianetics.
Yes.
Is that like the evil iPod you used to have?
Yeah, it's all tied together. Hey, hold on. I'm going to go to a break, and I know you've been waiting a long time. So why don't you, just hold on. I'll talk to you in a minute. Okay.
All right.
We're going up over the break. I'm going to talk about real things. And if I've led you, any of you, astray, I'm sorry. And if not, just remember the Bible is still the most popular, best-selling book in the world. The conversation continues. We'll get into it for reals. Hang out. It's Marin in from Malloy. Folks, it's about 6 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. I'm subbing for Mike Malloy, who is spending some time with his family, as I understand it. You can reach the show at 800-989-1480. 989-1480. 800 before that. It's been fun. I've enjoyed being on the radio. Now, there is breaking news. I'm sure you've already heard. You're probably watching Randy Rhodes being bumped off of CNN for them to report that the Marine who killed the pregnant colleague, who had accused him of rape and burned her in his backyard, has just been arrested in Mexico. Just been arrested in Mexico. And apparently it was an international effort. Everyone got on board, and they nabbed this guy, Marine Corporal Cesar Lorien. Well, there you go. That's that. I thought I'd do that. I don't get to break news much, but I thought I'd break some news. I don't know that anybody needed me to break it for him, but if you heard that from me first, there you go. That guy who killed that co-worker from the Marines and burned her in his backyard and buried her, he's toast. He's done. They caught him. Now, let me finish with Teresa, and then we're going to move into politics or things. the economy, the oncoming apocalypse, that I am very hopeful. I still have hope in my heart. I have faith in humanity. A lot of people don't have faith in humanity. I still do. Even the worst of them. Even the worst of the people, I think, will get their karmic return. You know, that's the weird thing about karmic return. You know when people say to you, when you do the right thing, and they say, don't worry, he'll get his, or she'll get hers. Doesn't part of you think like, yeah, but I want to be around for it. I mean, if I'm not around for it, how do I know? How do I get confirmation that they actually got theirs? I'd like to be around for that. Is there any possible way I can be around for it? No, there isn't, and not unless you cause that, not unless you take that action. Well, that's what I'm saying. Why can't I just hurt them now or make them feel some sort of awkwardness or pain or punish them for what I feel is righteous, because that's not the right thing to do. Walk away and just assume that they will get theirs. You know what, folks? Some people never get theirs. Is George Bush ever going to get his? Is he ever going to get his? Is he going to be impeached? No. Is he going to be tried for war crimes? No. Is he going to pay any sort of price? Does he have a conscience? He's a moron. I mean, but you know what? They kept him a moron. Did you see this today? Did you see this in the news today? That there were meetings, a series of meetings, where CIA interrogation methods, including waterboarding and all the other things we know as torture, were discussed and ultimately approved. These are meetings that went on between 2002 and 2003, because the Justice Department had issued several memos from its legal counsel, the Office of its Legal Counsel, that justified using interrogation tactics. And the people that were involved were, of course, Attorney General John Ashcroft, Colin Powell, George Tenet, Condoleezza Rice. And these were basically getting legal support to torture terrorist suspects, as you all know. But the interesting thing about this piece of information that is floated by me here is that they cut the prez out of the loop. They didn't even have him in the room. They insulated the president from policy. And I don't even think it was because he would stop them. I think it was really just like, why wake him up? You know, he's just got to bed. You know, it was hard getting him down tonight. So why don't we just go ahead and do this? We'll tell him later. Is he going to pay the price for that? These guys, all they do is displace blame. In any corporate entity, in any government entity, in any place there's business being done where there's middle management and there's people above other people, most of the effort goes into planning your life, forward thinking, in the way of being able to displace blame onto somebody else. Trickle it down, get away unskirmished. That's not going to happen with George Bush, you would think. But after this, he's going to be leaving the next president with such a flaming bag of poo, an internationally flaming bag of poo. Let's talk about McCain in just a second. Let me finish up with Teresa here. All right, Teresa, you're back. I didn't want to. I was being
okay.
Nice. So what's on your mind?
Well, last night you were talking about dieting and stuff, and I was just champing at the bit to tell you about. My hairdresser who told me that I said, you know, I'm gaining a lot of weight. And he's like, everybody tells me that they're gaining a lot of weight. And, you know, and he was a northern Italian guy. And he's
right.
Like, you know what I tell them? I tell them to put the shovel down.
There you go. Quit shoveling it in.
I called up about the fact that I think – you know, we're starting to look like, to the rest of the world, that we're a rogue state.
That's absolutely right. And there are things that McCain said today, thanks for your call, Teresa, that definitely endorse that and frighten me. I mean, this actually came out yesterday, but McCain basically said he won't rule out preemptive war, which was basically the only thing that kept us from being a rogue state, was that we would react in defensiveness, not act in offensiveness. So he's basically continuing Bush's policy that he will not rule it out if he deems it necessary. If that guy deems it necessary, if John McCain, who is deep down inside still a man in a cage, who is deep down inside still a man who thinks that the Vietnam War is winnable, who is looking to win this war for all of those people that said when we pulled out of Vietnam that it was the wrong thing to do and they hate the peaceniks and they hate the hippies, and he's going to win it for them. This guy is a volatile, angry, corrupt, manipulatable. Is that a word? But also a untrustworthy person to have in control of anything. And this is what frightens me the most, is that he's closing the gap. How is that possible that this guy is closing the gap? How could that happen so quickly? Are Americans still that stupid? Here we are immersed in a war that is completely bankrupt this country, that is at the heart of all economic woes that we are experiencing in this world. Oil is at its highest right now, today, over $112. You know what I just spent over in Highland Park to fill my car up? At a cheap gas station, I drive a Toyota Camry, four-cylinder. No frills, baby. I just want it to move and be reasonable. $60 to fill up my car. $112 a bucket, a barrel. The mid-year budget deficit has set a record. The Treasury Department reported Thursday that the deficit through the first 6 months of the budget year totaled $311 billion. $311.4 billion, which is up 20.5%. from the same time last year. And this is the largest deficit for the first half of a budget year ever. Ever. Only surpassing, 6 months ago. And this administration said that the total budget would be $410 billion. This is just crazy. And it's all because of that war. 4,000 people plus, 4,000 almost, I wish I had the exact number, but I don't want to be disrespectful. A lot of soldiers, men and women dead, injured, civilians dead, injured. It is the dark drain at the core of what's killing the earth right now, economically. The euro is at record highs against the dollar. It's almost worthless. We're a rogue state because what else have we got? We're a rogue state because what are we even protecting, this vacuum? And the frightening thing is about McCain, among many other things, it's just that he's shameless. Even in the way he phrases today, to buffer himself from dismissing the mortgage crisis by blaming the victims. The best that this guy can do, and this is why the regular conservatives are going to start to come around, disregarding the fact of the horrendous bloody money hole in Iraq, is that in reaction to the mortgage crisis, now McCain has changed his tune, but listen to the language here. Quote, there's nothing more important than keeping alive the American dream to own your home. And priority number one is to keep well-meaning, deserving homeowners who are facing foreclosures in their homes, unquote. Well-meaning and deserving, i.e., not poor people. I don't care where they live. Do you understand that is the core of this ideology. That is why the right wing is so shameless, is that because it is built into their ideals that it's either adapt or die. If you can't pull your own weight, screw you. You're done. You're not getting health care coverage. Die. You're a drain on the system. There's no welfare. Die. You're a drain on the system. If you're not a well-meaning, deserved homeowner, you're a drain on the system. Find someplace else to live. Move back into the water. Build a spaceship. Go to the moon. That's how the right wing thinks. Screw the poor, eternal war, pillage and steal until you get caught. And when you get caught, blame somebody else and get yourself a nice house and relax. That's what the right wing is. It all started with the Powell memo, 1971. We're not going to let those dumb hippies screw our game up. 16 past. I'll be back in a second. Continue this conversation. Call me up if you got input on this, 989-1480, with an 800 before it. Mark Maron in from Malloy. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. No one needs anyone, they don't. Jonah's an American. I'm afraid of America. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. All right, folks, it's about 22 past, 21 past, whatever your clock says. I don't know which clock to read, but it's around there. Mark Maron in for Mike Malloy. 800-989-1480. This is the plan. This was the plan. Leave the next guy with the burning bag of poo. Economy's faltering horribly, diminishing. I'm sorry if I threw something out there that maybe people aren't hip to, and I just really just started to get back into it myself. I don't know what sparked me into it, but I have downloaded this thing before. I have printed it out before. The Powell memo is something you really gotta read. The Powell memo was written in August in 1971 by a guy named Lewis F. Powell Jr., who was later named to the Supreme Court by Richard Nixon. And this was a letter he sent to the leadership of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It was a confidential memo, and it's been called the Powell Memorandum or the Powell Memo, the Powell Manifesto. And at the heart of this piece of writing is really the plan that was undertaken by the right wing, by the conservative intelligentsia, by the conservative moneyed interests, to dismantle the welfare state, to dismantle everything FDR put into place, to dismantle social programs. And it was done under the pretense that capitalism, the free market system, the American enterprise system, was under attack. And this is 1971, so imagine what the country looks like at that time. Everything is blown up. Everything is blown up. There are hippies in the streets. There are drugs everywhere. Manson is on television. John Lennon is singing. Abbie Hoffman is leading, you know, chanting scores of, you know, multitudes of people. And this little guy, who represents a conservative way of thought, that the last time they remember things being good was in 1958 under Eisenhower, and everything is just a mess. The SDS, things are flying. And he decided that American business was under attack. Now, this is a design. If you read the Powell memo, you will see it's all laid out. This has been going on for 36 years. This was a design to take back and protect the American capitalist system. And he felt that it was, if I'll quote a little bit, he decided that the sources of the attack, the sources are varied and diffused. They include, not unexpectedly, the communists, the new leftists, and other revolutionaries who would destroy the entire system, both political and economic. These extremists of the left are far more numerous, better financed, and increasingly are more welcomed and encouraged by other elements of society than ever before in our history, but they remain a small minority and are not yet the principal cause for concern. The most disquieting voices joining the chorus of criticism come from perfectly respectable elements of society, from the college campus, the pulpit, the media, the intellectual and literary journals, the arts and sciences, and from politicians. In most of these groups, the movement against the system is participated in only by minorities, yet these often are the most articulate, the most vocal, the most prolific in their writing and speaking. Moreover, much of the media, for varying motives and in varying degrees, either voluntarily accords unique publicity to these attackers, or at least allows them to exploit the media for their purposes. This is especially true of television. Now, he was talking, and it seemed in not so vague terms, that they were minorities. I think he meant numbers, but also minorities in terms of ethnicity. But, I mean, this is how it was laid out. I mean, the solutions in this, and this is 1971, were to take back the college campus, redirect the intellectual flow and thrust of what was being told society, start being pro-business, get corporations to start being pro-business, get everybody to engage and celebrate, you know, the great free enterprise system, the great free market. Yeah. I believe that it's definitely worthwhile reading, because I'm not sure where we got off on this, but I got an email yesterday that this has been going on forever. I mean, this is the wave that is crashing right now. I mean, you've got the economy, you've got this mortgage crisis that's going to cost the world $950 billion, and you've got this cabal of neoconservatives, many of them who are direct descendants of the Powell memo, many of them are direct descendants of its ideas. You know, the Chicago School, Leo Strauss, Milton Friedman, and those guys aside in terms of shock and awe capitalism. But this was what was meant to be protected. This was what, at any cost, the cost of, you know, millions of lives, poor people's lives, millions of people that were, you know, involved in unions, the idea of socializing anything was such a threat to these guys that this is why we have the right wing that we have. And the reason why the left wing always seems a little more fragmented is because we are, and that's the way people are. It's because we have a certain amount of compassion, and we don't live in an adapt-or-die society. I mean, that was supposed to be the big shift, wasn't it? That we move out of that wildness, that we move out of that, that civilization would protect us a little bit, help everybody treat people better, not just let capitalism define a new biological hierarchy. I'm going to get Randy Rhodes on the phone. Is that okay with you guys? I'll be back with her or somewhere. I believe I can get her on the phone. I think she's off CNN, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm going to try. Stay with me. It's about 34 past the hour, 35. I don't know where you are. I don't know what's wrong with my clock, but it's Mark Maron in for Malloy. 800-989-1480 is the number. And right now on the phone, the recently welcomed member, new member of the Nova M family, formerly of the Air America family, Randy Rhodes. Randy Rhodes. Wait, hold on. I know you didn't get the time you deserved on Larry King. Let me try and do it.
I got bombed.
Wait here. I'll do Larry for you. So what happened? What happened over there?
You want to know what the real phone call was? Larry called me the day that this whole thing, that they decided to put out a press release about a 2-week-old stand-up thing, right, that I did in San Francisco in a nightclub.
Yeah, you know what's sad is that, you're not even a stand-up.
Well, thanks, Mark. Well, thanks. There goes my whole defense.
Oh, stop it. Go ahead.
No, but, I have been doing stand-up. That's the thing.
Right.
I've been doing it nice and quietly. So, because, you can't, comedy's a dangerous thing, as we just learned, right? And in the wrong hands, hello.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have. I've been doing it since, look, the Rocky Sullivan days.
They used to
try and get me up, and I was too scared. And you know how I am. I'm like a nervous little wreck. So they said, well, why do we have to hot walk you like a horse? The only way to get over that is keep on doing it. So I quietly was doing it. The first time I did it out in public was in Phoenix.
Right.
So your listeners, they were like the first to see, and it wasn't great, it wasn't bad, it was okay, I paced around a lot, and I thought, when I got off, I didn't hate myself.
I used to be a pacer.
Right? I'm a pacer.
Yeah, I used to.
I didn't hate myself, though. It was the first time I ever did it that I didn't hate myself. And
this
I thought,
was
you
in
know
San Francisco?
No, that was in Phoenix.
Okay.
So I did it a couple more times, and then, San Francisco came up, and I was like, well, hell, it's a nightclub, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to do stand-up, everybody cool with that? Yeah, And after, this is the crazy part.
Right.
First of all, for 2 weeks,
There
was no media about this, pro or con. Nobody wrote anything good, no one wrote anything bad, no one wrote anything.
Right, who cared? It was just a stand-up show.
It was just a stand-up show. And then 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, we changed owners because, like I said on Larry, it was Thursday, and,
Again.
It's mandatory at Air America to change owners every Thursday.
Yeah.
So we changed owners.
Right.
And the guy was like, he didn't do his due diligence. He was like, 2 weeks later, he got around to reading my contract.
Uh-huh.
is like, what do you mean you can quit, but we can't fire you? I'm like, well, look, you know, I negotiated that thing, you know, with the officers who are currently the officers of your company. You can take it up with them. Then they said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do some market research, see what your value to the company is. I'm like, well, what are you going to do, read an arbitrage? Oh, you can't say that on the air. Dump me.
Right. I don't know how to dump you.
I'm like, what are you going to do, read the ratings? You know, what are you going to do? Blah, blah,
right.
No, their idea of market research was, we'll go and we'll put, you know, the story out there that we're embarrassed by you and see if you can withstand scorn and ridicule. And,
is it really the way that, so they actually said that to your face?
Not only did they say it to my face, they said it in a big lawyered up meeting after all this happened.
But that so that was a threat?
Oh yeah, it was like amend. They had been asking me to amend the contract. I said I like the contract. You know, I negotiated that contract. 7 months it took to negotiate that, and I was like, no, you know, I'm not negotiating a contract. It is what it is, and it's got a year left, and live with it, kind of thing. And I started helping them with business plans and sales plans and all kinds of things. And you know, people got a little shaken up. Maybe the status quo wasn't going to keep on. So, make a long story short. They kept through this whole thing. They kept on saying, "Well, here's the notes I took, okay, from the lawyer meeting. It said we have buyer's remorse. We want you to amend your contract as we asked you before. We're going to do market research, and they did it. They called and they said, okay, you know what we found out? You're the most valuable thing we have. Without you, we don't have a business. But now we can't put you back on the air. I'm like, why? Well, because you'll tell the true story,
which you just did."
I was like, so what's the problem? Why don't you apologize to me? And that way, if people call up and they're outraged about it, I'll just say, well, yeah, it was a stupid thing they did, but they apologized. What are you going to do?
And they said
to me, we're not in the apology business. And they kept on saying, amend the contract, you'll get your mic back. Amend your mic. It wasn't even about the stand-up. It was amend your contract, you'll get your mic back. Their unwavering position was if you don't amend your contract, you will not get your mic back.
So amend the contract so you couldn't get out when you wanted to get out.
So I couldn't get out if I wanted to get out, and so that they would have the ability to fire me at any time for anything.
I still don't understand the impetus of drawing attention to the stand-up show. That was a test?
It was a test to see if I could withstand ridicule and scorn.
Isn't that interesting? Because everybody out there who is a fan of yours and is a fan of Air America was so immersed in conspiracies and theories about, you know, Democratic Party operatives, this, that, and the other thing. But it really just came down to thuggery. You were being shaken down to stay in a contract.
Well, you know, I can't get inside a man's head. You know, I can't. So I don't, you know, I do get the, you know what it's like there. And you know that there are people that like the status quo more than anything. And there are people that want Hillary to win more than anything.
Yeah.
And they will do anything to make sure that, you know, you don't say anything, you know, that would ruin their chances of you know, being in her White House. You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
But I can't get inside their head and tell you what their motivation was other than what they said. And what they said was, we want you to amend your contract. We're going to do some market research. I begged them. I said, don't do this. You're going to blow up the whole company. Don't do this.
Right.
And they were the ones that put out the press release, you know, denouncing the appearance, the stand-up, because they wanted to see how valuable I was to them. And then they came back and said, oh, well, you're the most valuable thing we have. How are we going to get you to stay? But you still have to. I said, well, just, you know, put me back on the air and we'll call it a day. Oh, no, you have to amend your contract. Their constant position was, if you amend your contract, then we will give you back your mic. And they can't do that. You can't, there's a name for it, but I don't want to say it because it's just too. You know what's amazing? Look, Maren, they hired you. That was the best thing they ever did. And you did stand up. Are you telling me you never said George Bush was a murderer? And it's, you know the joke of yours that I horribly stole from you and apologized to your face for stealing it from you. But it's the best joke ever about, you know, if you know, the rapture, right, love him because,
right,
you know, they're ready to go and
they're
he's their guy.
Go. Yeah, right. They're ready to go. But, you know, I know, when I first heard this, Randy, I had been in situations where I had done a show, I'd gone to do a show at a club, and it had been rented for the use of the Tanqueray people.
Right.
And I didn't know it was a private event. So it's a private event for the Tanqueray people, and they've got pictures, they've got cardboard cutouts of that Mr. Jenkins ad. You remember the Mr. Jenkins campaign with the old guy with the martini glass?
I'm only 30.
Okay, no, it wasn't that long ago. All right, so they got big cardboard cutouts on either side of the stage, their big advertising campaign. The guy comes up to me before the show and says, "Look, I don't care what you say. You can talk about the Pope. You can talk about Jesus. You can call anybody you want a whore. Just do me a favor. Don't make fun of Mr. Jenkins."
So of course you're obsessed with Mr. Jenkins.
But, exactly. So, you know, but the thing is that, like, a lot of people realize this isn't a First Amendment issue. What it was, you know, a corporate entity, you know, bullying you in order to, you know, to make you do something. And so much of that happens that it really isn't a constitutional issue. It's an issue of loyalty to companies and how companies treat their employees.
Well, it's that, because that's what this was. This was really about getting me to open up a in-force existing contract, which, you know, is boring talk for other people. But I just want people to understand that justice is for rich people. You get it? I mean, I can't afford to do what I would, you know, what I am entitled to do. I just have to move forward and just, you know, say I got a great radio story to tell my grandkids. I probably got the best radio story, and I've heard some great ones in my life, you know. I mean, the J-Core stories, the Clear Channel. So there's so many really, really good ones. But this one was right up there. And, you know, I just want to move forward, and I miss my audience. Mark, I've been banished. You know, I was sitting there in the Larry King Green Room watching the TV, right?
Yeah.
And they're talking about all this religious stuff. It was like crazy. Glenn Beck was on before me. I have to sit in his chair. But
I cannot deal with that guy.
Well, he's a very interesting guy. He's a very good-looking person, I will tell you. But strange story. Yeah, he's handsome. He is.
I think he's hiding the worst kind of fascist inside that smile.
Well, that's the truth. I mean, his heart is black, but, you know, outside, not so bad. You know, I mean,
right.
I'm not I tell the audience, every time I do stand-up, I tell them I'm a sure thing.
Yeah.
Because I am, Mark. You know that. So, I'm like, you know, freaked out that, you know, you can't really get justice in this country unless you have, oh, let's say $250,000 to give some litigator as a retainer, because it's going to be in court for like 5 years.
What about the story that Larry Johnson was the one who put the video of you up on the web?
Oh, Larry Johnson has done some very interesting things. I mean, really, really questionable things. I think him and this girl, I can't remember her name, but she's a radio wannabe, and she wanted my job. And
he's an ex-spook, right?
Yeah, and he was a friendly, too. I mean,
yeah.
I used to talk to him all the time about Valerie Plame. He was a classmate
of
hers.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's a friendly, but, you know, he's got a political motivation, and it's he wants, you know, he's totally pro-Hillary, so, you know, that's his motivation from what I can read, you know, on those websites. But, you know, who cares? It's a bunch of bloggers, you know. Look, let me tell you something. What I was going to tell you is I was listening to all this religious crap, you know,
right.
And Glenn with his God and his, you know, his and I'm following all, and then before that there was this very strange story about this El Dorado, Texas church where they were like, you know, taking these underage girls.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they were like having their marriage night.
I talked about that.
Beds in this church. It was the way. So I'm like, why is there all this religious, you know, like, what is the sign I'm supposed to be? And then I got on the air, and I was just about to tell Larry before he cut me off. I was just about to tell him, nothing about the Amish, Larry. I've been shunned, and I don't even know what to wear. You know, can you sleep in your own bed when you've been shunned? What are the rules? I mean, I don't
know.
Well,
you're not shunned for long. You're now with the Nova M family, and I love you, and it's good to talk to you. I should get out of here.
Well, I love you very much, and I'm totally excited to be there. You know that you're working with the radio elite there. You know that, right?
I know your boy.
I know. Well, I love you, Mark.
I love
you
too.
So much. I do.
Take care, man.
You too, honey.
Bye.
Bye.
Randy Rhoads giving you the lowdown from her point of view, which is the closest one that you're going to get. I like talking to her, I'll tell you that. And I'm glad she's going to be back on the air. I have no idea what's going to happen to Air America now. I have no idea. Or what's left of it. Okay, stay with us. Let's get back into the other stuff in a second. It's Marin in for Malloy. You know the number, 800-989-1480. Hey, it's Marin in for Malloy. We're just talking to Randy Rhodes. All juiced up and excited to be on the Nova M. The number here, I just had it in my hand, and now I don't have it anymore. 800-989-1480. That was great talking to her. I hadn't talked to Randy in a long time. You know, I was sort of green when I got into this game, and Randy is now among the many who have been fired from Air America over the past few years. I don't know what's been going on there for a couple years. I talked to my buddy Sam Cedar. He's upset today. He feels a little jilted. Is that the word, jilted? They got bells in for Randy next week, and I don't know what's going on. I can't really get a pulse on it, and I never know what the hell is political, what isn't political. I know that I used to host one of the best morning radio shows that ever existed, because I don't know if many of you know, there was a lot of money at Air America in the beginning, and the woman who put a lot of the organization together creatively, Liz Winstead, who was part of the Unfiltered crew with Chuck D., and Rachel Maddow, had hired a lot of writers. I mean, a lot of big TV writers. And they had been, you know, spend months and months banking stuff that ultimately they did not use much of. But when I got there, there was a lot of these guys hanging around. I knew a lot of them. A lot of them were stand-ups. Some of them were on The Daily Show writers. And they were hanging around. They were like, what are we doing? They were there to work. So between me and Jonathan Larson, Brendan McDonald, Dan Pashman, Chris Lopresto, and a crew of writers we put together, we overworked, folks. If you go to markmaron.com, my buddy PJ's got a stream up there. I think it should be working at markmaron.com of the Morning Sedition comedy bits and the Mark Maron Show comedy bits, is that we almost were running a television station. We would stay up all night scripting bits, doing all kinds of stuff. And, I mean, you know, doing characters. I mean, we were overworking. One of the things that Brendan says to me now, Brendan P.W. McDonald, if you remember him, if you knew the show, I'm sorry if you're out of the loop on this, was that, you know, we really worked too hard. And I think I was about that. I think I really was the first on-air personality to be fired, wasn't it? Now, Sue Ellicott, I think, was. And she was part of my crew, and she didn't jive well. And me and Riley were on the, we started doing the show together. And the reason I got pushed out was simply because, as far as I can tell, I was too irreverent. I didn't pay enough respect to the CEO at the time, a guy named Danny Goldberg, who was this weird Prozac-ridden, Frankensteinish presence that would lumber about Air America in a very socially awkward way. And I think he was just pissed off at me. I think he just didn't like me. And there was no doubt that we had the greatest show on the network. And we were actually, I think, did an amazing thing that you just don't hear anymore. We did honest-to-God radio theater. We integrated it with news and with conversations. And this guy, it was too much for him. He couldn't understand it. And he also didn't like me because I'd yelled at him. And people who are rich don't like to be yelled at. And they don't really like honesty that much either, you know, which is when you get into the Randy situation as well. I mean, honesty... Truth, I mean, everyone has a personal truth, but, you know, when you speak truth to power, even if it's the power in your office, the reason it's so disconcerting in hierarchies is that if you've got a truth-sayer, you got a bunch of people under that truth-sayer to the side of them saying, yeah, you do it. Good job. Yeah, say the truth. And then you got the people you're speaking truth to that say, you know, we really appreciate your truth, but you can't come back. You're not invited here anymore. You ruined the party. And that's the problem with being somebody who tries to speak the truth, as brutally honest as it might be, is you got a lot of people that appreciate it, that respect it, but they're not going to take the hit for you. And then you got a lot of people who you're talking to that they don't want to be bothered with it because it creates a hole in their armor. It makes them vulnerable. So the truth teller is a rare breed, and it takes a lot of guts, and a lot of those guts aren't really earned. They're just a natural thing. There's something about truth-telling people. They're just spunky, rebellious people that the higher-ups want to break, and the people beneath them, you know, respect and fear, but don't ultimately have the same type of courage and can't always be expected to come to the rescue. But unlike the situation with Randy, who has a tremendous amount of fans and support, and myself as well, you know, when my show went off the air, the outpouring was phenomenal, to the point where, you know, days before I was to leave, you know, Goldberg was like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know. And I'm like, shut up. Seriously. Let it go, man. Too many confused people, too much money, too many egos. It's really just business over there. I wish it was more interesting. All right, coming up on the top of the hour, stay with me. I want to talk about racism. Is that okay? And I'll take some calls. Mark Marin from Malloy. It's about 6 or 7 past the hour. I'm sorry. I'm on a slight delay from ground control. I never know really what time it is, and I guess I could just round it off. It's Mark Marin in for Mike Malloy. The number here is 800-989-1480. This is the last hour of this. I never know when I'm going to be able to do more radio. I guess I'll do my show with Sam Cedar. We do it on Tuesdays, our little video thing. You can go to samcedarshow.com to see that and when we're going to do that. Let me just take a few calls because it seems like maybe some people are, let's see. Let's see what's going on. Here we go. Elena in New Mexico, are you still there?
I'm still here. How you doing, Mark?
I'm fine. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I don't know if you remember me. My name is Elena. I used to be Elena from Illinois. And I talked to you when you were on with David Cross and your sub for Sam Cedar right before Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Sure, I remember.
Oh, really awesome. Because it was what you said, man. Like, 3 days later, I got proposed to.
Get out of here.
Yeah, for real. I got a diamond and everything. I was shocked.
All right, well, tell me exactly what I said to you. Now I want to know what kind of advice.
I talked to you. I got a package when we talked. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Regardless.
No, I want to know now because, like, I remember the show with David Cross because I remember David got mad at me.
Yeah,
he always gets mad at me because for some reason every time we're on anything together, I wind up saying, "Who would have thought it'd be you that'd be so popular?" And he always goes, "Well, I thought that." I'm like, "I'm sorry, that was rude. I never mean it to be bad, but you know, him and I have such a history." Of me watching him fail, that just the idea of him being so successful still makes me chuckle as much as I love him. Oh, you should have seen how badly he bombs sometimes. Oh, my God.
Really?
People just, when we used to do straight stand-up, people just did not understand David Cross. And he really is one of the funniest people alive. And he would just get up there and do characters right away. He wouldn't even say hi, and he'd be in a character. And the audience would just sit there stupefied, like they have no idea what to make of him. So what did I say to you? Tell me, give me the context.
You asked me how long I'd been together with my boyfriend, and I said, you know, at the time I think it had been like 6 or 7 years.
Oh, right. And
like,
I said,
really?
Uh-oh.
What? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And on Christmas, I got my ring.
Thank God.
You know, I wanted to thank you for that. That was awesome. You definitely.
Did you bully him a little bit? After you talked to me, did you start pressure him a little bit?
Not me. No way. I think hearing you say that, you know, it's been a while, and David Cross, which, you know, a couple of our heroes, so, you know, we were paying attention.
Oh, he was.
Awesome. Thank you.
He was listening, too.
Oh, yeah, he heard that. I mean, we went back and chopped that bit out of the podcast and everything. We saved it.
Oh, well, I'm glad I can help. Now, I only hope that your marriage works out better than mine have.
Aw, me too. Yeah. You don't deserve it. You deserve so much better. You deserve to be happy. You're such a great guy. I love you.
Thank you. I love you, too. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Oh, well, I wanted to mention one more thing, actually.
What?
the article in Hustler Magazine for June coming
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
Written by Alex Bennett. He's talking about this guy, David Bernstein.
Yeah.
Is that guy from Air America? And he mentions there's a rumor going around that Randy's not going to be there any longer and all sorts of stuff. So I was just kind of wondering, you know, you probably haven't seen that yet. I don't imagine you read Hustler. It doesn't seem like your kind of thing. But there's a very interesting article about that.
So it's written by Alex Bennett, the radio DJ who's on Sirius. On Sirius, I don't know where. I used to do his show in San Francisco. He's been around for a long time. And he's writing about who? David Bernstein?
Well, yeah, he says David Bernstein's a good friend of his, and he's forecasting the total breakdown of Air America, which, you know, I love the original Air America.
He's forecasting that? What a genius.
Well,
boy, yeah,
everybody.
That guy's really reading the runes, for God's sakes. It's not too hard to forecast, is it? And you know about Randy now. You've been listening.
Yeah, but I still
don't think it's a conspiracy. But thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. Yeah, it's not rocket science, folks. I mean, it was a mismanaged company. It's just not rocket science. You can sit and plot and scheme and think all these different angles, and it is what it is. It was mismanaged from the beginning. It was overly ambitious, and now they've had to downsize dramatically, and I don't think they expected to lose Randy. I don't think they expected that at all. And, you know, it was up on the auction block, and then people bought it with whatever their interests were, whatever their ideas were. It's just sort of like eventually, you know, if you... Look, when I got there, my analogy was essentially, and this happens, I think, with any company that continues to change hands, is that when I got there, we were all on the same team. We were a big, happy family. We had big plans. We had big ideas. We were going to take over the world, and we were doing the best we could. Everybody was working real hard, and then things got tough. And then, you know, mommy left daddy, and then all of a sudden there's a stepdaddy there that I don't know, and he doesn't like me, and I don't really like him, and he's threatened by me, and he fires me. So, yeah, after a certain number of stepdaddies, you know, mommy gets tired, and all the kids end up hating her and leaving, one way or the other. That's the way it goes. It's amazing to me that Rachel Maddow is the last woman standing, and she came in originally to be a news broadcaster. She was there to read the news, and she's the last one standing. It's phenomenal. Kalo, the Costco ho there. He's still there, though. All right, Adam, KTLK Los Angeles. You're on with Mark Maron. What's up?
Hey, I wanted to thank you, but it seems like we should be celebrating the United Artists formerly of Air America.
Right. I know,
you
know, man.
Although if Nova's the place where we get, I'm so poor, I hope we can, I'll get internet. I want to just give tribute to Randy. When she went live here in L.A. and lost the late afternoon spot, a Latino, English-speaking, sort of desperate voice called up and said, "Where's Randy? Where's," almost like, "Where's my Randy?" And she was so loved. She is loved everywhere. And this Tanya Harding tour that's being conducted by the Hillary camp. I want to do a poster, Hillary's Tanya Hart tour and the road to Alzheimer's revealed.
All right, buddy. Okay, man. Very interesting.
Revealed big.
Okay, very interesting. Take care, buddy.
Uh-huh.
What? I sort of drifted in the middle of that. All right, let's take some more happy calls. How are you, Jake, listening on Sirius in liberal Kansas?
Yeah, I'm a truck driver. I wouldn't claim liberal as my home. I just happen to be here. Your website, man. I went to your website.
Yeah.
It ain't up, man.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I mean, your last name is spelled Marin, right?
Maron. Marc.
Oh, Mark Moron? Is that how it's spelled?
Yeah. I never heard that before, Jake.
Okay,
here's a new
yeah.
one, Jake.
Yeah, well, anyway, hey, I was so happy to hear about Randy, man. I'm telling you, I almost started crying when I heard that she was coming to Nova M. That made me feel so good.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes she really, you know, really pisses me off, but most of the times, man, I mean, ever since I've come to Sirius, I haven't been able to reach her and everything, you know, haven't been as far as, you know, listening, and it's just great, man. I hope she can get on the Sirius. I know she's going to have to bump somebody off, but, man, she's the best, and I hope Maddow comes over eventually, too, you know, because, I mean,
America. I don't know what the future is over there.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Mike about the what I considered conservative creep, you know, where everything is slowly creeping in and, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's really a pattern of if the conservative infiltrates. It seems that liberals are completely capable of blowing their own 2 feet off, giving them more time.
Well, you know what? One last thing. I hope you guys really press the rich liberals to start helping you guys at Nova M. I know Mike mentioned that before. I used to think that long ago when, as it pertained to Air America. These guys got to get off their butts. I mean, they got money. They support Obama and this, that, and the other. They should be supporting you guys, too, to keep you guys, your voices on the air, because I am so tired of the conservatives monopolizing the air.
I'm going to make some calls right now, Jake. Thanks for calling me.
All right, man.
Bye, man. Yeah, well, I mean, that's true, but, you know, that that was also the way that Air America started, too. And the problem is that when you have people with money, especially if it's if they have their own agenda, they're going to want to dictate some things. I mean, that's the problem with money and people with it, is that if they're going to spend the money, they're going to want to have a say in what goes down. Now, unless someone's just being philanthropic and says, do whatever the hell you want, they have no political affiliation. You know, that there's a Chinese sovereign wealth fund that has $200 billion to spend on American investment. That's Chinese national money. If they gave Nova M the, you know, 2 minutes of interest of that, we'd be all right. We'd be better. Maybe the math is off. I'll be back in a second. Marin from Malloy, 800-998-1480. Hey, it's Marin in from Malloy. Last bit of it. We're in the last hour. 800-989-1480 is the number. I guess I'm dishing on Air America about my own life for a change, talking about myself. Talking about myself again. I don't know. I'm looking at all these articles in front of me. I had plans to talk about Obama, plans to talk about a lot of stuff here. But I'm going to, in the last half hour. I just want to get a couple more of these calls quickly. All right, Barb, listening in Cave Creek, Arizona. Turn down your radio. You're on the phone with Mark Maron.
I know I am.
How are you?
I met you at a Dave Edmunds concert in 1986, and we went out to the Source for lunch.
Yeah.
And I left with an old boyfriend of mine. Sorry.
Yeah, and you, really, a Dave Edmunds concert where? In Los Angeles?
In Los Angeles.
Oh, my God.
And you asked me out. I was doing comedy and writing and working with Bette Midler and teaching acting, and an old boyfriend of mine showed up at the same restaurant. Remember the Source? The health
No, yeah, it was right down the street. So you literally just hurt me. You just left me hanging there. You said, I got to go.
Well, we were with somebody else. I'm not sure who the other comedian was.
Oh, so it was the three of us.
Yeah, and after the boyfriend showed up, you guys would not give me a break because it was like somebody I had just broken up with, and he happened to show up at the restaurant.
Okay, all right, so we were busting on you. So it wasn't quite a date.
No.
Okay.
I mean, would have been a date had he not shown up.
Well, how's it going for you? You living in Cave Creek. You certainly ran away from L.A.
Oh, I ran away from L.A. It's a long story.
Okay.
It's a long story. I wrote a couple of feature films, and if you see my name on them, let me know.
Oh, yeah, oh, one of those stories, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You got screwed, and you said, that's it, I'm done.
Well, I sued him, too, but I can't tell you.
I'm going in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, well, that's where writers are supposed to go.
Yeah, well, how's that going for you out there in Cave Creek? That's like an outpost, isn't it? It's like a town that was invented out there in the middle of nowhere,
right?
No.
This is an old cowboy town that's been here since the 1860s. It's a riot.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
It's a lot of material, and I have another life, but I'll send you my website sometime.
Okay, Barb, I appreciate it. Nice talking to you. I'm sad I don't remember you hurting my feelings.
Well, that's okay. It wasn't a big deal.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Ron, listening on Sirius in Minnesota. Where you at, bro? It's Mark Maron. Hi.
Am I still here?
Yeah, you're on the phone with me. You're on the air. What's on the go? What's going on?
Unbelievable. It's where, you know, I mean, the whole thing is where the only thing I wanted to tell you is where Air America is really diluting their system. You know, I mean, when you really come right down to it, it's they get rid of you, they get rid of Randy Rhodes, and you know, if they want to be able to take and put a message out there, it's where they're losing it, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the center cannot hold after a certain point. I mean, you know, not only politically, but you know, it's the old Yeats poem. It's just that what's left? I mean, you go through three or four regimes. The idea is the idea. The brand is the brand. And this is another horrendous chapter in their ongoing sort of chaos. I don't know what the hell is going to happen to it, but ultimately it's just a brand now. It's not a network. It's a syndicator of radio programs, and they just lost their biggest program. Who the hell knows what's going
to
happen?
Yeah, but the whole thing is where if they want to be able to take and market something, it's where don't they think they have to be able to think about the people? They want to listen to you. They want to listen to Randy Rhodes. They want to listen to, you know, I mean, when you know, I mean,
yeah,
they
yeah,
want
I
the
know.
Truth. I think the people want to listen to the truth, don't they?
Yeah, no, you'd think that, but, you know, thanks for your call, Ron. I mean, there's a bit of a misconception around that. We are a community. You know, the progressives, the lefts, and the lefties who like to listen to these programs, we're a community. How big that community is or how big it could be, I don't know. But I do know one thing. We're very loyal. We're very dedicated. We enjoy debate. We like to hear different points of view. We like to put our two cents in. And we've gotten to know each other over these last few years. I'll tell you that. A lot of the people that listen to me on my show still email me. I'm still in contact with some of them. You know, Randy's got, you know, thousands of dedicated listeners. What are the numbers in the big picture? I don't know. I think we're still a bit of a minority, but it's getting bigger. I don't know why they make these decisions, but I think you're really talking about a business that is so submerged in not really turning a profit for whatever reason, bad management, who the hell knows. So it really just comes down to people investing, saying, here's the money, I'd like this to happen, and then we'll pay you out of the money that I put into it, and then still no profits. So I don't know what could happen or what will happen. I don't know. I can't even speculate. But it was disappointing for me because it really felt that we had a wave of something going. And that wave has certainly crashed. And it's crashed a little more. That I know. And I'm not even being diplomatic. I have no idea what the hell's gone on there for the last couple of years. I haven't been there. I haven't really been in contact with them since they told me I couldn't do the show anymore. That's all. What's up? All right. That's a break. All right, so let's try to get into. I'll take the rest of these calls about Air America, and then I'm going to try to talk about something important. Though this is important, it's important to us. Listen to me, I'm getting all choked up. What's the matter with me? Why am I emotional? Why can I just not be? Why can I turn it off? Huh? Why do I talk to my cats? 800-989-1480. That's the number. It's Marin in for Malloy.
Song I wrote, you might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy.
All right, 35, 34, 30 something past the hour. Is that helpful? For you people that don't need to be committed to time, to where time is not that important really at this hour. It's Mark Maron. I'm in for Mike Malloy coming into the final half hour. Perhaps we'll focus on a topic. 800-989-1480. We've been talking about Air America, been talking a little bit about Randy. I guess we can do that. It's a big day for her. She's now a member of the Nova M family. She's no longer off the air. She's back on the air. I don't know if she'll be on the air at your affiliate, but who knows? It will happen because people like them some Randy.
I said I was emotional before before the break, and someone wrote, Mark, you were emotional, and you can't turn it off because you are human. And the fact that you can't turn it off is a good thing. Please try to remember that. If you could turn it off, that would mean that something inside you was broken enough to have had to create that coping mechanism. And the fact that it hasn't means you are not broken and are just human. That's a very good, emotionally healthy thing. And that's a very wonderful thing to say, but let's not forget, I'm a comedian. Okay? A comedian. So let's not think that there's something not broken in me and that I can't turn it off. I'm just happy to be letting it out. But I appreciate you saying those nice things about me. Okay, she's continuing to write. I know you don't really know me much, so my words may not mean that much, and that's okay. But Sam knows me a bit, so he will vouch for me not being a sociopath, psychopath. You know, I talk to my cats, too, all the time. As long as we don't expect them to answer us in English, I think we are okay. Well, mine speak French, and one of them speaks Italian, which is interesting because they're all from Astoria, which would make sense, and one of them doesn't talk at all. All right, so look, I guess what I was going to talk about, oh, man, what? Someone was at that Randy event? Is that what you're telling me? We have a couple of questions. Was the Randy thing a political event, and somebody was at the event? So let's see. Let's talk to Rich. Rich, on the Internet, you're talking to Mark Maron. You were at that event in San Francisco. It was sponsored by KTLK, right?
No, it was sponsored by KKGN, the green station there in San Francisco, and my quite distant cousin John Scott, the program manager, put it on. And I'm also Ishmael on the Randy Rhoads message board. Just wanted to let you all know that you're getting a lot of the RRMB members moving over. I just bought my Nova M subscription today, and a whole load of people are coming over from the message board after we were purged from Air America.
Right.
I felt like Stalin. I was waiting for the car to take me to the Lubyanka, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it was great. I mean, it was like, and then after all the hubbub, people who were there were all saying, hey, wow, all I could think of was witness to history with drinks, you know.
Right, but honestly, it did not feel like something was transgressed. Like there was
No. What I was always compared it to, because I grew up in San Francisco, was comparing her performance to my old Lenny Bruce records from The Hungry Eye, which was like four blocks.
Oh, come on, come on. Now, wait a minute.
I mean, it wasn't at that level, but
the truth of the matter is this would not have been as provocative or as controversial hadn't Air America taken action.
Yeah, exactly. It was on the web for a week and a half before Larry Johnson snagged it and set it up to Huffington Post, and the fit hit the shan, you know.
Yeah, all right.
But it was a great evening, and there were fun. It was a sold out house. My wife and I, we flew in from New Mexico to see the show.
Yeah.
We were also on the Randy cruise with her to Alaska last summer, and you know, I've been defending her all over the boards and posting
all right.
Father Mapple's sermon wherever I could find it.
Okay, Rich. Well, thanks for clearing some of that stuff up for us.
All right, got to it.
Take it easy, man. Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, you know, it is what it is. It wasn't a controversial thing, and it wasn't even that big a thing. It wasn't even that big a thing to say until they made a mess of it. They made a mess of it. All right. Now, what I want to talk about is this. I talk to a lot of liberals and a lot of progressives and some Democrats who say that they say, look, a black man can't win. Now, how can, you know, I don't understand where that comes from, that they've decided, and I don't even know if they're Hillary supporters, I don't know, but I find that to be racist. Am I wrong in thinking that's racist? Let's drop these calls, I'm hanging up on some of you, all right, and take some new calls about this, because it seems to me, I don't know when I'm going to be in Philly, I'm just answering that, because I'm dropping your call. Look, it seems to me that seems defeatist and somehow racist. And I know a lot of people who don't think they're racist. And I've been recently talking about race, and this is obviously a racist country. There's no doubt about it. There is institutionalized racism. There is also just regular old racism. And I think a lot of progressives, whether they like it or not, are a little bit racist. And they're a little bit uncomfortable. I mean, you have to realize that, you know, tolerance, like I like to say on stage, I'm not racist, I'm nervous. It's case by case. It's not ethnicity specific, but we're all a little frightened of things that are different, whether they be things, people, rituals, whatever, you know, ways of life. But tolerance requires empathy. Tolerance is not putting up with. You know, racism is delicate. Obviously, a broad stroking racist is shameless and says, I hate them. I hate black people. I hate Jews. I hate Chinese people. But there's a little bit of discomfort
at the core of mild racism. I don't understand this idea of why liberals or progressives would say, I don't think a black guy can win. I don't get it. And if you think you're not racist, give me a call, 800-989-1480. And I don't think that these are Hillary supporters. Here's a quick thing you can do. If you don't think you're racist, here's how you test yourself. Next time you lose something that you think has been stolen, see where your brain goes. See how you cast that short mystery film. How many ethnic types do you use? How many blacks and Mexicans do you get through before you go, oh, here it is under the seat, and go, I don't know. I mean, that's really the question, is that why would somebody like my mother, why would somebody like my neighbor, who's a progressive person, have a defeatist attitude in that way? Like a black guy can't win. Of course a black guy can win. I mean, for God's sake, what era are we living in? And there's this idea that the Midwest is still teeming with racist hillbillies. That can't be true. I don't think it happens in the street. It maybe happens in people's minds. But I'm curious to know how many progressive people that are like, oh, I'm for Obama, and they slip into that booth and they vote Hillary or McCain. I mean, these numbers are sort of disturbing. That Obama and that McCain has leveled the playing field. How the hell is that even happening? You know, if we get into a situation where it's right up the middle again, they can steal it district by district again. And I mean, enough of this squabbling among the Democrats. Enough of Hillary and Obama doing this thing. Let's get on the same page here. For God's sakes, I mean, if you guys want it, if you want this enough, if you think you can get us through this next 4 years, which is going to be one of the most difficult presidencies in the history of the office, and you think you can do it, I believe you. I know McCain can't do it. And I don't like Hillary that much, and I don't know Obama, but I'm willing to gamble on him. Because I want to feel better. And I know it's going to be hard, and I want somebody driving this thing that's going to let me know honestly how hard it is, what I can do, and how to feel like there's hope in the world. You need that kind of person in there now. Screw all this BS about he doesn't have the experience. To what? Bomb people? To keep a war going indefinitely? Yeah, I don't know if I'm a victim of a right-wing frame or not, people. But I, for some reason, bought this idea that, you know, when Colin Powell says, hey, if you break it, it's yours. And then I wrote to, you know, I talked about that the other day. And someone wrote to me an email that said, I'm a 56-year-old, which puts me in the group that remembers the Vietnam War clearly. I remember that from 1969 to 1973, we were stuck in the same place we are today. Half the nation hating the other half. Soldiers stuck in an unwinnable war. The Viet Cong waiting for us to leave. We eventually pulled out, and the Republicans were pissed because they lost. But eventually Vietnam rebuilt because we left. We need to leave Iraq now. Repeat war, different terrain. And I don't know why my brain didn't even go there. That I have some intrinsic sort of guilt about what's happened in our names by a cabal of criminals. That I think we are somehow responsible. We're clearly responsible, but now it's about to change hands. And this administration is going to leave this economy in the crapper. It's going to displace this mortgage problem down to the states so they have to manage a new homeless problem. And they're not going to take any troops out of there. So if a Democrat is given this opportunity, he's got to have the courage and the diplomacy and the fortitude to say we're leaving. We're really leaving. And even as I say that, there's part of me that's like, how could that even be possible? How is that even possible? They just built this thing there, this monstrosity of an embassy, this town. That's supposed to be the new stronghold of the Middle East for great American imperialist interests, to protect our oil resources and to watch Israel's flank. How are they ever going to leave? How is a black man going to be president? Why do we ask ourselves these questions? Andy in Portland, quickly, what's on your mind?
Oh, yeah, man, I just agree with you on that whole race thing. Because, well, part of it is, like, if we have a guy, well, for one, I'm of mixed heritage. I'm Mexican and white. Mexican and white. And having a person like that in office would do so much because they understand both sides. They understand the racism. They understand the hierarchy that is put into racism that continue that like helps elevate classes.
Good point.
And because that we can't get on the same page in terms of race, it makes it hard to see how a lot of us are in the same place economically. And
right.
So I think a lot of people, because of what you were just saying a second ago about how there's a lot of guilt for what America has done. Like, Jeremiah Wright may have not have used, like, I guess, the most politically correct language, but he was right. Martin Luther King was going to release an essay before he died, just before he died, that said why America is going to hell. The genocide of the Native Americans.
Right on, man.
The Philippines, Mexico, you know what I mean?
I do, yeah, the byproducts of imperialism.
Yeah, and it's all, you know what I mean? If we have a black man in office, I think a lot of people would, you know what I mean? It's
sure, yeah, sure. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for your call. It'll assuage, is that the word? Liberal guilt. Martin Luther King was assassinated in a dubious, questionable way. Robert F. Kennedy. Is that it, Robert F.? Assassinated in a dubious way. The 60s. Manson was used in the media to kill the 60s. It's all part of that Powell memorandum. This is how they executed it. That's my belief. Stay with us. Keep on the phone. 800-989-1480. Marin in for Malloy for the last 15 minutes.
Mexican bus boys learn to speak Minglish.
Right.
Everyone's a little bit racist today. So everyone's a little bit racist. Okay. Jokes might be uncouth, but you laugh because they're based on truth. Don't take them as personal attacks. Everyone enjoys them. So.
All right, it's about 10 before the hour or so, kind of, yeah. Marin in for Malloy, this is it, the last 10 minutes. Might be the last 10 minutes of my radio career, who knows? I seem to show up here and there. Want to thank Mike Malloy for having me guest for him. Thank the folks over at Novem. Thank Ian for the tremendous song choices throughout the evening. He's improvising, folks. Ian is on the board improvising. And thank you, people, for listening. Let's blow through some calls. Marlon in Florida, listening to WINZ, where my mommy listens. What's happening, man?
Hey, how are you doing?
Okay.
Oh, you've got a great show tonight. I just wanted to just say that I totally agree with you, and that the last caller was just talking about racism. I just think that if we could just admit to ourselves that we all have, like, little things that just bug the crap out of us. That
yeah.
It would just, you know, it would be okay, and then we could just talk, and we could laugh and cry, and
right. We're a little nervous. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous. I'm a little nervous too when I go into. I mean, I'm black myself, so I can say I'm a little nervous too when I go into a neighborhood I'm not familiar with, or
sure.
or when I see people huddled together, I get a little nervous. But you know, I can honestly say that. But you know, when we don't admit these things, we tend to exacerbate the condition that we live in now, and I think that we just could get beyond. But I mean, these little things.
That's right. If we could all just be human for a minute, because we're not that much different. Thanks for your call, Marlon. Appreciate it. Steve, listen on Sirius. How are you, man? It's Mark Maron. You're listening where? In Walnut Creek. I've been up there. You there, Steve?
Yeah.
I've been up to Walnut Creek.
Hey, this is Steve. Great show tonight. I just want to commend you. There's two things I just want to mention real quickly. First thing about the issue of racism, and actually I just went through a university class, part of my degree, about multiculturalism. And, you know, the conclusion that everybody in the class came to that was unescapable is the fact that everybody is prejudiced. Everybody's racist on some level. And the only way that we are going to be able to go forward is to recognize the fact that we're flawed, and that be able to take that into account before we make decisions, or before, if we're genuinely good people, we can call into account the fact that we make mistakes and tend to be prejudicial in certain situations, and then correct them.
That's right.
You know, no, if you come across with the idea that you can avoid your own biases, then you're just going to be, you're going to be lost. And I just want to say one really quick thing, too, about the election. And one of the things that always bothers me is everybody's fear that people's sensibilities are going to be so, attacked or whatever in this Hillary-Obama debate that in the end it's going to be beneficial to John McCain. And, I just want to say this. I think true change occurs from the bottom up. And if we get a leader in now that will help us and rectify things, in a sense it's going to be good, of course, to fix some of the things going on. But in another sense, no change happens until true crisis occurs. And on some levels, I just want the country to wake up, to get outraged, something to happen.
Oh, yeah. We're in it, buddy. Thanks,
I hope
Steve.
So.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.
Bye. We're definitely in it. Yeah, I mean, it's happening. Once it starts hitting everybody in the pocketbook, they feel it. They feel it. Hi, Angela in Portland. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What's
awesome.
Happening?
Not a whole lot. I just wanted to provide you a visualization for the evening that if you can imagine the entire audience in a packed house standing up and giving standing ovation as you close out the last 10 minutes of the evening.
All right.
It's been a fantastic, 3 days, and you got to be who you are, and it was wonderful.
Thank you. I'm going to picture that now for the rest of the show.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about community. Is it any coincidence that you got to bring Randy on the air tonight and to talk about what has happened? And so, like, bringing the old back with the new and to kind of march us forward in a few months as the new election happens. You know, there's the hope is there, and you are a part of bringing that together tonight.
Thank you, Angela. Right on, sister.
Standing ovation. Rah!
Okay, take care.
Bye. All right, bye-bye.
Well, that's very nice. That's very nice. I don't know if I have time for this. I think we've got, what do we got? All right. Judy, listening in Phoenix, Arizona, you have a story? Is it a fast story?
It's a fast story.
Well, what do you got?
First, I wanted to say that people spend all this time debating about whether someone's racist or not, and everybody's using different definitions. And it's not about how you treat a person after you categorize them. It's about your gut feeling before you act. And this little story that always helped, that helped me is that you're sitting in a Denny's restaurant in a booth with another lady, and three teenagers come in with tattered jeans and jewelry and tattoos. And they walk up to your table, and the lady says, "Oh, yeah, blah, 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 it's her son." And you're sitting there, and you laugh when they walk away about teenagers nowadays. And then 5 minutes later, three teenagers walk through the door, and they've got the same kind of style, and they're black, and you kick your purse under the table. That's
right.
Racism.
Thank you for that story, and it's a nice way to end up, to keep people aware of their own actions, their own minds. I appreciate that. Try to be nice. Try not to be too judgmental. It's been a great time. It was nice getting behind the mic again. You people take care of yourself and be careful. Turn your brain off for the night. Get some rest. Marin in for Malloy. He'll be back next week. Take care.